I'm Lisa Stone, and you're listening to Parenting Aces. Welcome to Season 10 of the Parenting Aces podcast. We are a proud member of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, and I am coming at you from Atlanta, Georgia, which you can see I'm not in my typical podcast recording spot. I am in the corner of my condo with no art on the wall behind me, so sorry about the boring background, but at least you get me here. For those of you who are watching the video version of this, for those of you listening, hopefully the sound quality is what you're used to, and I'm really, really excited about my two guests this week. I don't often get two guests, so this is a special occasion for us at Parenting Aces. But before I tell you about them, quick reminder, if you haven't become a premium member of Parenting Aces yet, we'd love to have you join us. Just go to parentingaces.com, click on the join button, read all about the perks that you get. The main one being that you get quarterly consults with me, and I always love consulting with our members and getting to know the members of the Parenting Aces community, but also lots of other perks available to you as a premium member, so check that out. Now, let me tell you a little bit about this week's guests. We have a father and son duo. We have Orlando and Alexander Bravo. Orlando is a former junior tennis player, a former collegiate tennis player, a current powerhouse in the world of finance, and his son Xander is a rising high school senior who has recently committed to play college tennis at Orlando's alma mater. So it's a great story. I'm really excited to share their story with all of you. Let me just give a big thank you to Coach Todd Whittem for connecting me with the Bravo boys. And here they are. Let me get them online. I am getting them unmuted, adding them on. Orlando and Xander, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Orlando, I'm going to start with you, Orlando, because, you know, age before beauty or something along those lines. My understanding is that you had a very, very interesting junior tennis experience growing up in Puerto Rico, but making your way to Nick Bollettieri's academy, where you were there alongside Jim Courier and Andre Agassi. So please share with us how you got from Puerto Rico to Florida to Bollettieri's and what that experience was like.
Well, thank you, Lisa, for having Xander and me. And if there was ever a great example of age before beauty, is in this podcast. So I appreciate you saying that as well. So look, for me, tennis growing up since the age of eight, all the way through college, midway through college, it was my entire life. It was the way that I got to meet new friends, to get out of Puerto Rico to explore new places, travel, play tournaments in Latin America, Central America, the Caribbean, and of course the U.S. tour. And in that journey, I'm very fond of the sport because it is what showed me how many different things were possible. And that's an amazing thing that I carry through to today, especially when I mentor younger people. But the way it was for me is I remember 1977, there was an exhibition tournament where V.S. Gerolaitis played in San Juan, and my mom took me, and we loved what we saw, and I started playing. And then a great coach, Antonio Ortiz, who was my lifetime coach, and mentor, took me under his wing and really taught me how to play. My first tournament outside of Puerto Rico was in Florida, and I lost in the finals to Jim Courier, who killed me in the 12 and under. I think it was like 2-1 or 2-0, something like that. And from a bit of that friendship and my parents getting to know his family, I then started going to Harry Hobman's. I don't know if you remember that academy back when, that then became the Palmer Academy. But in that, I was exposed to a lot of good players, a lot of great coaches. And then it got to the time through playing junior tennis that we thought that it was very beneficial that I go to an academy with a higher level of competition so that I can continue to develop my game. And that's when I went to Balotelli for part of high school. And it did wonders for my game. I was roommates with Currier, and I was in that, I wasn't nearly as good, but I was part of that junior group of Sampras, Currier, Chang, David Wheaton, who was also at the academy, Martin Blackman, who was an awesome player, just a great piece of American tennis.
That's amazing. I mean, what an awesome time in American tennis, right? And to think that you were in the middle of all of that. All of the guys you mentioned went on to have incredible professional careers. You chose to go to college. How did you make that choice?
Well, it wasn't really my choice. I wasn't good enough.
But what makes you say that? Like, how did you realize that college was the right choice for you?
Look, it you know, really, that group was always in the top five, top 10. There was always a pretty big difference between that group, even at the 12s, and us who were 40, 50, 60, 70 in the country. There was no UTR system then either. Yeah. But it was especially when they all turned 16 to 17 that their explosiveness as athletes, besides their strokes and the time they had put in, it really, really showed. And for me, it was, do I really try and struggle playing some satellite tournaments at the time? Mm-hmm. Or do I use that experience to get a phenomenal education and play college tennis, which was hard enough? And it was a really obvious choice for me.
Right. So you wound up at Brown University and played tennis there. And can you talk a little bit about how you chose Brown? And Xander, I'm coming to you, so hang on there. But I want to hear a little bit about how your dad wound up in Rhode Island at Brown University.
You know, I was first I got in. So you got to get in or recruited. So I was recruited by Brown. And given the super competitive environment, right, you have all these parents watching and kids. It's incredibly competitive, and it's more competitive now, but it can be done. That's the key. It's to stay positive. And I was recruited by another Ivy League school. And what I loved about Brown is being a student athlete and not being not having been through the most rigorous high school, for example, like a boarding school that really trains you academically. It gave me a soft landing. With the ability to form your own curriculum, decide on your own major, do everything pass fail if you need to until you get comfortable enough. It's also a place where it's super collaborative, so students are not comparing grades at every minute. It's not an in and out system. It's everybody makes it. So that once again, I use the term. The soft landing is so important as a student athlete, because then little by little you start gaining confidence and saying, I can do this and I can be a top student as well. And mm-hmm. that is what Brown does that is totally different than any other Ivy that I've come across.
Interesting. And Xander, congratulations to you. You've just committed to go play at Brown, following in Dad's footsteps a little bit. And I want to talk about that in a moment. But first, I understand that you grew up in San Francisco and, you know, getting an Ivy League education is something that's very important in your family, right? Academics are very important in your family. But being able to combine your love of tennis with a high level education is also very important to you. You recently moved to Florida because you kind of realized, either you yourself or you with your coach and your family, that you needed to up your game a little bit. And by that, I mean, bring in more intense training, get yourself ready to be competitive at that Ivy League college level. What happened that kind of triggered that thought process that, hey, I'm not getting what I need here. If I want to achieve this goal, I've got to make a change.
I think I would really say is I definitely didn't see myself not improving in San Francisco. I feel like I was still improving at a steady rate. But what I really saw was that I needed to improve at a much faster rate to be able to achieve, you know, the Ivy League goal, which has been a dream of mine since ever since I can remember. And, you know, when I almost was, you know, beginning towards middle of my junior year, I really realized that the goal is very achievable. It's going to be very difficult. I'm going to need to put a lot of hard work in. I'm going to need to make some great relationships with some of the Ivy League coaches if I want to go to one of those schools. And I also said, you know, I'm going to have to keep my academics up as well. And, you know, very importantly, I'm going to have to make huge strides in my tennis game overall. So that's when my dad and I and my mom, we were all researching, you know, great facilities and places around the United States for, you know, great tennis training experience overall. And we came across Todd Whittam's place, TW Tennis. And I think what we saw there that we didn't see anywhere else was still the ability to have individual attention as if you almost have a private coach on you 6 hours a day, but at the same time, a small peer group of kids who are also going through the same thing as you and you can push each other with. So that was astounding to see. You know, we didn't know such a place really existed. So as soon as we saw it, I guess we booked my ticket. And I think, you know, the original plan was to go for 2 to 3 weeks, you know, make sure that I liked it. And I did. So I guess I'm here to stay.
And I should point out, this was all happening in the midst of COVID too, right? I'm guessing you were doing school virtually at some point in your junior year because COVID hit us all. How did that kind of come into play with making the move? Because you were already doing school not in a brick and mortar setting.
Exactly. Yeah. So basically what I noticed was my high school in San Francisco was still virtual at the time I started with Todd Whittam. So what I did was I actually switched to another high school based in San Francisco, which I could make my own hours around my tennis training. And I would be able to do class from 5:30 to 8:30 PM or 5:30 to 7:30 PM after tennis every day. And I decided to do that because if I had stayed with the virtual option with my high school, I would have found myself logging on to mandatory classes from 8:30 AM Pacific until 3 PM Pacific. So, you know, that would take up a lot of my tennis training day and almost would make it seem like there was no difference in even going to Florida if I was just going to be logged on to class all day. So, yeah, I think that was very important. And my other school in San Francisco didn't even go back in person until mid-May. So I realized I really wasn't missing out on, you know, spending time with friends. And, you know, of course that it was hard to be away from them, but I realized that this was definitely the better decision.
Can I ask which school you're doing?
Yes, it's called Fusion Academy. And I think they have a few nationwide, but I'm doing the one based in San Francisco.
Got it. How difficult was it for you to make the move in terms of your social life? You mentioned the fact that, you know, you were already doing school virtually, so it wasn't like you were getting the ability to hang out with your friends anyway. But, you know, things are starting to open up a little more now that the vaccine's more widespread. Do you miss that? Do you miss the day-to-day contact with your buddies back in San Francisco? Or have you found other ways to stay connected and met new friends in Florida?
Well, you know, I'm super glad I have made a bunch of new friends in Florida. But, you know, of course, I still miss my friends back home and everything back home. I guess, you know, sort of a choice I had to make. You know, I had to sacrifice certain things coming to Florida. You know, I was, you know, in the start of my junior year, I was still able to see a few of my friends here and there, maybe a little bit to go eat lunch, but I wasn't missing any sort of a, you know, real social scene per se. So, yeah, I think, again, it was the obvious decision. And I made new friends at Todd's place. And so, yeah.
Orlando, can you talk a little bit about how maybe you used your experience leaving home and going to train at an academy to help Xander understand and come to the decision to do the same thing?
Yes. You know, for parents that have younger kids, it's that process of letting go. And there's at a certain time, the your kid knows more what's best for them than you do. And that's a transition. And with the case in Xander, that was the case pretty early on. Xander made the decision to go to Tots and go to Florida because it was right for him. And I backed him on it. That really, really was it. Now, of course, Xander's mom and I, we discussed it and we agreed with that decision, but we weren't pushing that decision. We as parents also did our homework together with Xander, and everyone we talked to, coming from a tennis life, we have contacts, right? And we have people that we know, and everyone spoke so highly of Todd. College coaches, professional tennis players that we know or got in touch with, or former pro players, former competitors of Todd's through the circuit. Just everybody had a positive view in every way of Todd and his program.
Can I ask what specific questions you were asking as you were trying to, you know, validate this decision or come to terms with this decision that Todd's Academy was, or I won't call it an academy because I know he says I'm not a tennis academy, that Todd's place was the right choice. So, because I think a lot of parents struggle, like, what questions should we be asking? What are the things we should be looking at when making that decision of who should coach our child?
Yeah. The first thing that we look for, and this applies not only to tennis but to everything, is he or she a good person who really cares about the mission? In this case, really caring about the kids and the mission of that kid, not their mission for the kid. And that was the piece that was just outstanding. And there was a track record behind it. Todd had many former kids and current kids that, as Xander mentioned, were in that path to make it to great colleges, either both tennis and academically or tennis. And that was a path. And he was really, really passionate about them achieving that goal. That's the number one thing. The second thing is, how well does he and the other coaches know tennis? You know, well, the track record's also there. Former great pro player, and with Pierre there, who I believe is one of the best coaches of all time, and probably former player as well, and the whole system, it's like, okay, these guys, they know the game. And the third thing is, you know, what's the peer group like? And if the peer group is similar, and Xander really mentioned that, you kind of move with your peer group. Those were the three things, and they were validated.
Mm-hmm. Xander, how about for you? I mean, maybe it's the same things your dad mentioned, or maybe there were some other factors that made you feel like this was the best choice for you.
Yeah, I completely agree with what my dad said. And also, you know, in my first few days at Todd's, I realized that it was specific, you know, very hard training that I hadn't really received before in my life. And what I also realized was that it feels like I have three private coaches just for me, Todd, Pierre, and Bruce. It feels like I have the three, it feels like I'm a professional player with three private coaches. And I've talked to every other kid in the system and they feel exactly the same way. So I guess they're always, you know, of course, giving you incredible, you know, help and advice on the court. And, yeah, it's a system like no other. So I guess that was really convincing for me to stay.
Todd has told me that the improvement that you've made in a short period of time is like nobody else he's worked with. Talk a little bit about what your typical training day is like.
Yeah. So, I can't ignore it was very hard to achieve. You know, it was at first getting to an Ivy League school was, you know, seen as a little bit of a lofty goal for me. I had to make big strides. A typical day of mine.
Can I interrupt you one second? Can you tell us where you were ranking, rating, all that wise when you started with Todd and how you've progressed to where you are now? Because my understanding is when you first came to Todd was like, he's not getting to Ivy League. He's not there. Like his game's not there. His physicality's not there. So where were you when you started with him and where are you now that you did become attractive to the Ivy League coaches?
So when I began with Todd, I was around 390 on Tennis Recruiting.
For your recruiting class?
Yeah, on my recruiting class, yes. And, you know, I had spoken with many college coaches and many people, you know, were, I guess, telling me that a great Division III school would be more realistic, you know, because there are, you know, incredible academic Division III schools with good tennis teams as well. So I guess that was also in my mind that, you know, maybe I wouldn't be able to achieve this, you know, Ivy League dream of mine. But so basically what it took was 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. every day with about 45 minutes lunch break somewhere mixed in there. And I guess basically every minute of those hours training was brutal physically, mentally, technically. Now I think I'm around 200 on Tennis Recruiting. So yeah.
Okay. And so you said your day starts at 8 a.m. Do you start with fitness? Do you start with hitting? How does that look?
So usually I would start with a private, you know, lesson with Todd where he would either sometimes hit with me a lot of the mornings. Like this morning we were competing together at 8 a.m. So, you know, we either compete, we'll either drill, do hitting drills, or we'll do drills out of the basket. We'll do something really productive for, you know, an hour and 15 minutes. And then after that, I would join in with the other kids and do all of the fitness drills with them. Like, you know, all the, you know, we did many footwork drills, sprinting drills, core exercises, band exercises. And so that's for anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes. And then after that, usually I would begin training with one of the other kids. This past summer, I was training a lot with Ronnie Homan. So I was basically sitting with him all day, every day. But I would then train with one of the other kids until around 11:30 or 12, depending if Todd wanted to finish up on some more stuff. And then after that, we would have a lunch break. And after that, in the afternoon, we would usually play sets, match play for 2.5 hours.
Got it. And then after that, you still had schoolwork to squeeze in somewhere.
That's right. Yes. So after that, I would, you know, have to get in my car, drive home, try to eat a snack real fast, and then get right on to the Zoom calls.
Awesome. So you said when you first got there, everybody's telling you, you know, D3 is likely where you're going to wind up. You were committed to play at an Ivy League school. Orlando, how important was it to you and Xander's mom that he get the Ivy League education? Or were you good with, you know, a top D3 school for him?
Going back to that, what's important to us as parents is that Xander accomplishes his goals, not our goals for him. So he had that goal, and we wanted to support him on that goal. I do think that in terms of all this, there is no wrong choice. It's the college that fits the individual and the tennis program that fits the individual, and it's all equally good. However, if a student is motivated by a given goal, is then go pursue it with all the tools that are that are possible and that one can afford and that one can provide. And but it's ultimately up to the player. And in this case, Xander was very eager to put in those hours, be living far away from his friends or that he's had for many, many years since he really, really started school in kindergarten. And also, you know, combine academics with the sport. And, you know, that's the beauty of it is if individuals can accomplish their goals, you get a lot more confidence and you see the correlation between hard work and being successful at something, which is a beautiful thing.
Xander, I mean, hard work, you know, it's a given that you work hard. We're hearing it from you. And, you know, Todd has shared with me what you've been doing. What do you feel like it took for you to find it within yourself to put that effort in, to make that commitment to reach this goal of yours to play tennis at an Ivy League school? I mean, it's a lofty goal. Not everybody can do that.
Yeah. Well, I can say, you know, it took a lot of heart, I guess, to get up every morning very early and to keep powering through each and every day. You know, even though how much I love tennis and how much I love the game, you know, of course, not everything was, I guess, the most pleasant. It's not the most fun to, you know, be dying in 95 degree heat, humidity on the court and running side to side and not playing your best. So I think that, you know, that was very important. And it was also very important to be very disciplined and focused with myself. And what I mean by that is to really take in the coach's feedback as soon as you hear it, because they're only trying to help you. So it's very important that, you know, you really, I guess, also have that focus, because you can, I guess, put in great physical work there and get a great workout every day. But, you know, you have to really, I guess, focus on what the coaches are telling you. And if you take that advice into account, I felt like I was playing much better tennis after 2 days at Todd's mm-hmm. place. I felt like I was playing much better tennis after 2 days because they were showing me a new game style, which they saw within me by watching me play. And once they had really brought that out of me, I was like, wow, this is working out great. And it's been 2 days. So,
I talk about these similar things that you're saying, Xander. We kind of refer to that as coachability. Orlando, I want to ask you, as a parent, do you think coachability is something that you can teach your child, or do you think it's something they're born with, or do you think it's something they pick up along the way, seeing that behavior modeled by parents or by peers or, you know, having good teachers and coaches around? Where do you think it comes from?
I think you can teach that. I think it starts at a really early age. And Xander has always absorbed things very quickly and put them to work. But it's also he's developed that over time. And one of the things is through the sport and academics and a number of other areas. It doesn't happen overnight, but you can develop that muscle and improve it. It comes easy, so as you were probably alluding to, Lisa, it comes easier, more easily to some people rather than others. But you can develop it over time. And one of the things, and Xander was really touching on this, that I want to underscore about Todd's program, it's about the differences, the big, big difference. Of course, they work the kids hard. Of course, they know so much about tennis. It's individual focus. Individual focus. And I mean that in three ways. Number one is figuring out who that person's or kid's goals are, and then helping them achieve them. Not somebody else's goals, or not lesser goals or loftier goals. So that individuality. Secondly, is the caring for the individual. Every time Xander goes to play those tournament weekends, UTRs, every weekend, one of them is there. And I have seen Todd or Pierre, no matter what the player's level is, when they go as a group, they're there for every kid, for that kid's goals. If they're a developing player, they're still there. And then third, and this is what Xander was saying that really, really impressed me, is let's make that player the best they can be with what they have and within their style. Let the artist shine as an artist. Let's not try to play, make him or her play like somebody else, or in a style that they used to play, or in a style that maybe allows you to win a given match. It's, and for Xander has a very big game. He's a very powerful player. He loves that. So they were able to expose that very quickly, and that changed as well. It's kind of like working hard, but with a purpose, with quality, and doing the best with that individual.
Right. Xander, how old are you now?
I turned 17 in late June.
Okay. And how tall are you?
Just over 6 feet.
Okay. So, and are you still growing, do you think?
I think I still maybe have an inch or two left, but I'm hopeful I do, but who knows?
Yeah. So now that you're a senior in high school, you've got one more year to really hone all of these skills, both on the court and in the classroom, to get ready to go to college. How do you stay focused? We see a lot of kids in their senior year of high school kind of start to back off a little bit. They get a little lazy after they've committed to college. You know, maybe they, you know, get more involved in social things or things outside of school and tennis. How are you planning to keep yourself focused and honed in so that you are your best self, ready to perform at your highest level once you step foot on that Brown campus?
I actually spoke about this with Pierre today. So
my timing's perfect, right?
what Pierre really told me was, he's saying, you know, this year, you know, we're going to be still training you super hard, except for, you know, there's less weight on your shoulders per se. And so he said that, you know, it could, you know, make it as if I almost don't have as much pressure to, you know, keep making huge strides. But at the same time, since, you know, they trained me so hard, I automatically will. So I guess that's what he was basically trying to tell me. And he was also trying to tell me at this point, it's, you can see how good can you get. He's saying, how, you know, are you able to come into Brown playing a very high spot in the lineup, to really maximize my ability before I leave, to really see, you know, what is possible, I guess. So I guess that's what he was really putting in my head. It wasn't necessarily the stress of, if I don't get to this on tennis recruiting, if I don't get to this on UTR, I'm, you know, I might not be able to commit to Brown or wherever school. So, yeah.
So you've made the commitment. That pressure's off. How did you pick Brown? Was it the coach? Was it the other guys on the team? Was it the fact that your dad played there? What factors went into that decision?
So, Dad, well,
Lisa, it was definitely not that I played there. That was the only negative.
Sorry to say this, but I didn't, you know, the fact that my dad played there wasn't really a factor in my thought process, because I really wanted to discover where I thought the best fit for me was. So I started talking to Alex Kasaroff, the coach at Brown now, who started in September of this year. I started talking to him in November of my junior year. So November 2020, I started speaking to him.
And he was brand new there at that point.
He was brand new, yes. So he was brand new. He's coming in very excited. He wants to make Brown a very winning team. You know, he wants to make Brown the best in the Ivies, if it's possible, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, since he's a new coach, I guess he sort of has, you know, the Brown people, I guess, sort of watching him, you know, trying to see if he's going to make leaps in the program. So I started speaking to him in November of 2020, and, you know, he knew that my rankings and ratings and everything were so far under everything that he had, everything that he had recruited in the past, and everything that many of these other Ivy and top schools were recruiting.
But, and let me just interject. He came from Wisconsin. He came from a giant school with, you know, big budget and all of that. Brown also has a nice budget, but Brown hasn't been at the top of the Ivies in the last several years. So he's got a big job ahead of him, but he's got the experience coming from Wisconsin to know how to recruit and to know how to build a team. So was that a big positive for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also I'm so glad that he is such a great, genuine guy. And we were able to build a very great relationship early on. And I told him that I was going down to Todd Whittem's place, and he was thrilled that I was heading down there. And he began to see, I guess, more great results, improvements. I was sending him videos. I was sending him videos of me training with Sunwoo Kwon, one of the pros who actually was with us today. And eventually he asked me to do a pre-read, which is where I sent in academic information, basically my transcript, a description of my high school, extracurricular activities. He had a whole list for what needed to be sent in on the pre-read. That he then gave to admissions. And a few months later, he, I think in late May, is when I got the official offer. I remember where I was. I was driving home from tennis, and I was having a great conversation with him. And he said that, you know, he really would be very happy to have me at Brown, and made that very clear to me. And so while every bone in my body wanted to just commit right then and there, I realized that, you know, I didn't want to make a spur of the moment decision because I hadn't yet visited campuses. So then I called my dad and my mom, and I'm like, I'm so excited. I just got the offer from Brown. We have to visit campuses as soon as possible. So I took a visit up to Brown about 2 months ago in June with my dad, just him and I. And we spent the full day at Brown, and we also visited a few other Ivy League schools in the area. And I fell in love with Brown. I fell in love with the campus. I loved the freedom that you can have as a student there at Brown to really choose your own path. I loved the coach, and I really loved that he wanted me as a player. He didn't just, and as a person as well. He didn't just, you know, I don't want to say some coaches do this, but he wasn't just like, oh, he's this on tennis recruiting, I don't want him. Or, oh, he's this on tennis recruiting, I want him. So I appreciate that. And so.
And coaches, by the way, absolutely do that.
Yes.
So you don't have to say it, but I'll say it. And I think that is a standout characteristic. And I think you're very smart to recognize that that is something unique.
Absolutely. And so then from there, I was still in contact mainly with one other Ivy League coach who Todd has a great relationship with. And I really loved that school as well. But, you know, visiting everywhere, I felt more personally connected to Brown. But Todd was so helpful that he was able to have this other coach come down to Florida to watch me play in person. And I really got to meet him. And so I guess Todd really helped open up more options like that. So there was that day where I met that coach. And then a few days later, Alex was in Florida to watch the Clay Court Nationals. And so he came to watch me practice at Todd's. He got to see maybe like 45 minutes to an hour because we got completely rained out. But he still got to, I guess, see me play in person for the first time. And again, he reassured that, you know, he really wanted me on the team, that he would give full academic support. And so I didn't commit in that moment. As soon as he left, I called my mom and dad. It was a conversation with me, my dad, my mom, Pierre, and Todd. And we were talking for a while. And we were like, everybody said, man, you got to just commit. So I call Alex on the phone and I said, you know, I would love to be here at Brown. And so that's how it happened. Also, as a bonus, I was in San Diego visiting family a few weeks ago, and one of my new teammates lives there. And every day in San Diego, we would train for 3 to 4 hours hard. and then would go surfing for 3 hours. And I really became very good friends with my new teammate and was able to also speak on the phone with all my new teammates. And they are all such great, genuine guys that I don't think I could have made a better choice. So, yeah.
That's awesome. That is really awesome. I'm thrilled for you. Todd texted me right after you made your decision. So I've known about it for a bit too. And I'm very excited for you.
Thank you.
Orlando, I want to get back to you a minute. First of all, let me just ask you, how does it feel to hear your son talking about all of this stuff? Does it bring back good memories for you?
It really does. It's just awesome. I see his excitement, the excellent fit, and I'm really proud of him. And I know that he's going to have such an amazing experience and do so many great things, both in the sport and academically. That is just, I know that path. And I know it's going to be great. So I'm looking forward to really watching him closely, not in person and not bug him too much, but kind of keep up with what he's doing.
Yeah. It's a fun time. I can tell you from experience, it is a very fun time when your child is living their dreams. So you have a lot to look forward to. I want to just ask you too, Orlando, you parlayed your tennis experience and your academic experience into an amazing career, an amazing professional path. And I understand that when you're looking to hire people to work for you and your business, and you're in the world of finance, I don't know a ton about what you do, but I know it has to do with money and finance. And I understand that you love hiring college tennis players. Can you talk a little bit about that? And what is it that makes you kind of lean toward those college athletes as potential hires?
That's a great question. It's not on purpose. They just stand out. Okay, so it's not like us as a group of partners in our private equity firm say, okay, that's the profile. It's we go meet with a broad range of these great kids with different backgrounds. And by chance, because they have stood out, we do have a number and a growing number of college tennis players. It's amazing. And I think it is because private equity. Okay, so what we do is we raise funds, and we use those funds that we raise from our limited partners, institutional investors, to buy companies in software, improve their performance, and hopefully earn a great rate of return for the people that we're working with. It's a very individual job, and tennis being an individual sport, there's a lot of analogies one can make to it. So that may be one reason. The other reason is we look for individuals that have done something very different and very meaningful at an early stage in their lives. And of course, tennis or art or music or something very different really, really shows, and it shines as well. And then third, we look for people that have shown the experience of having a struggle and dealing with that. And you know that every time you step on a court, whether you're supposed to win or supposed to lose, or you're going to struggle. And that's the life. And that's the life of deals as well. Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down, but it's never done until the contract is signed, right? Until somebody wins the last point, which is super interesting.
I love that. The last thing I want to ask you, and this is a message that I have been pushing out on Parenting Aces for the last 10 years, is the importance of finishing this tennis journey as the parent and the player with a relationship of parent and player, parent and child intact. How difficult is it, do you think, Orlando, and then I'm going to ask Xander, I'm going to ask you the same question. How difficult do you feel it is to find that balance between pushing your child to get them to work toward a goal and hopefully achieve the goal, yet not being so overbearing that you wreck your relationship with them?
Xander?
He's passing the buck, Xander.
Go ahead. Are you going to?
No, I thought you, if you want to answer first, or if you want me to answer first.
Okay, well, what I can really credit my parents to is always being incredibly supportive of my goals without feeling some sort of, you know, them putting a huge weight on my shoulders saying that I had to get into a top academic school using tennis. I wasn't forced into tennis in the first place. You know, of course, my dad taught me how to play tennis at a very young age and, yeah, knew a lot about the games. That was very helpful. But I guess I pursued tennis individually through my own interests. I chose tennis as my sport. And, you know, throughout the whole process, what was great is I felt a lot of support that they were happy that I was happy playing tennis. But I didn't feel any sort of pressure from them that I had to do this. And that made it feel great at the same time that they were supporting me so much in what I really wanted to do and what I chose, but not forcing me into it. And I think that's how I was able to really, you know, I guess, improve so fast at such a fast rate, was because of their support of me being down here in Florida. They did not force me down to Florida. They did not say, Xander, you're going down to Florida because you're going to train with Todd Whittem and you're going to end up at an Ivy League school and you've got to do this. So I think that's how, you know, my relationship with my parents is, of course, amazing. So, yeah.
Orlando, your turn. You passed the buck. Now it's back to you.
Thank you, Xander. You've been very kind in your description. That I really appreciate that. And parents have to realize that they're not perfect, and that especially if it's your first as a tennis player or athlete, you haven't done this before. You may have been the kid in that situation, but you have no experience, so you have to learn as you go. There was a time when Xander was super young that he was playing this match, and the match didn't go so well. I think you were only 11 or something. And I was
think Xander knows exactly which match you're talking about.
Yeah, and I was fired up just going off in the car. Can't you see that he's always serving to your back and second serves? Don't you run around it? But couldn't you see all this? And I was just going on and on and on. And Xander goes, Dad, that is enough. The match is over. And I kind of stopped because I was really fired up. And I looked at him and I said, hey, just so you know, I don't know how to be a tennis dad. And then I called my coach when I was a kid. And I was telling him about this. And then Antonio, this and that. And he stopped me and he said, Orlando, let the kid enjoy the sport. And I was like, wow. So I think what I tried to do, which was super hard to do, is take a big step back. And you still wanted to comment and you still wanted to do this in practice and hitting with him, but take enough of a step back to then you can then re-engage. And it hasn't been easy because I also want to be a cool dad and not be all over him all the time. And that doesn't work either. But I also don't want to be that dad. So finding that balance of having Xander be my best friend, which he is, and also those hard work and ethic and seeking your own goals and doing the best you can and teaching that is sometimes, right, hard to do.
Very difficult. And, you know, Xander's following in big footsteps. I mean, Orlando, you had a very successful junior tennis career, collegiate tennis career. You have a very successful business. So that's a lot of pressure on a kid coming up in that type of environment. Xander, it seems to me, and you know, this is the first time we're meeting, but it seems to me that you have recognized that pressure, accepted it, and forged your path, and that you're on your way to doing great things yourself. So my people say, mazel tov to all of you for really figuring this thing out and finding a way to let Xander be Xander and to follow his own path, and supporting that Orlando by allowing him to make these choices and these decisions. And, you know, who knows what the future holds, but I suspect it's going to be really good things.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
As well.
Yeah. I think you guys are a success story. So I really love it. And I'm very excited to see what happens over the next year, Xander, and especially once you get on campus at Brown in 2 years, to follow your collegiate career there is going to be super fun. We'll have to have you on again, because we're running out of time. I wanted to talk to you about this new name, image, likeness stuff that's going on in college, but we'll save that for another conversation. But thank you both for coming on. I know you're both very busy, and I really appreciate you taking the time to share your story with the Parenting Aces community. And I look forward to watching you over the next several months and seeing where your life, your tennis, and your academics take you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And to my listeners and viewers, thank you so much for tuning in. We will catch you next time on Parenting Aces.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you've been listening to the Parenting Aces podcast. For tennis parents, by a tennis parent. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us and write a review on iTunes. For more information on navigating the junior and college tennis journey, please visit us online at parentingaces.com. Thanks for tuning in and sharing us with your tennis community.